Ladies and gentlemen, it's now time for the game where we ask a very well-known people about very obscure things. Dr. Phil McGraw is a friend of Oprah. He's a best-selling author, a master at resolving tough situations. He's best known for the advice he doles out to guests who come on his TV show looking for tough love and folksy homespun tips. He's faced down feuding mothers and daughters and couples who cheat on each other. He's never faced us. Dr. Phil, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Well, I'm glad to be there, I think. It depends on what you're going to tell me.
Well, I know. That's actually kind of true. So, by the way, I mean, Dr. Phil, is that the appropriate term of address, or do you prefer the more the less formal Phil?
I'll just leave that up to whatever makes you feel best.
All right. Thank you. I've always heard you were easygoing. Well, we wanted to talk to you about your remarkable career. I actually, until we looked into it, did not know how you first met Oprah. It turns out that you helped her with her famous libel trial, or slander trial, down in Texas. You were actually a jury consultant. But she says, and she's talked about it, how taken she was with you because of she says, both your wisdom, but also she says she loves what everybody calls Dr. Philisms. Is that the correct technical term?
Well, that's what she calls them. So if that's what she calls them, then yes, that's correct.
That's what they are, yes. That's what they are. And these, of course, are your famous catchphrases that we've all become familiar with in your show and your books, you know. Like, this ain't my first rodeo. That's a famous one. Did somebody write stupid on my forehead? Now, is that how you grew up talking in Texas?
Well, you know, everybody around America and the world, because we're on in so many foreign countries, they always talk about those things that I say. And all of my friends in Texas are saying, what? What did he say? What are you talking about?
People say that one of the things you specialize in, one of the things that's made you so popular and successful, is tough love. You don't take a lot of guff. You're not one of those therapists or advice people who sort of spend a lot of time expressing understanding or sympathy. You tell people to shape up, and they got to face the facts and deal with what they're dealing with.
I don't have a lot of time with people when I'm working with them on the show. But I have to say, I've been very much that way all of my life. But let me ask you something. Don't you know the truth when you hear it? I mean, like, if somebody's telling you, hey, it's going to be okay, there's that little voice in your head, if it's not going to be, and you know it.
Right.
People know the truth when they hear it, so why pussyfoot around? Why mince words? I mean, let's just call it what it is. And so I do tell people the truth as I see it. My view is if somebody wants to come and talk to me, they ought to not have to guess where I stand when I get through talking to them.
Isn't it nice, though, and this is just an opposing point of view, just for the sake of argument, isn't it nice, though, to be lied to a little? I mean, to say to somebody, oh, you really are a wonderful person.
Yeah, that's what you got a mother for, Peter. That's what your mom's doing. I don't want to get out of my lane and get in the mom lane, okay?
All right, so I just got to ask you, but there are all these situations in life where, you know, sometimes maybe a little dishonesty is good. So here you are, and you're with your wife, who is also an accomplished author, and she says, honey, does this make me look fat? And you say,
of course it doesn't. Okay, listen. I've been married 32 years.
Yes.
And I did that by being smart, okay?
Yes.
I understand the words, yes, dear.
Yes.
And how can I help?
Okay.
But you know, one of the things that I get from Robin sometimes when I go home, if I'll say something a little, maybe a little assertive, she'll turn around and look at me and say, don't you Dr. Phil me, buddy. She said, you do that stuff on TV. You're at home now, buddy. So I'm kind of like I've always said, I'm tell it like it is, Phil, on TV, and I'm hear how it is, Phil, when I'm
exactly.
At home.
We do want you to play our quiz, but we had this idea. We had such this rare opportunity to have you on our show. We don't have any problems, but we've got these friends who do, and maybe if we could tell you about them, you could help out. So there's like this one friend, and he's an older guy, and he's decided to partner up with somebody young. She's not quite as smart as he is, but she's more popular than he is, and he's beginning to feel a little bad about that. So how do you deal if you're the older partner in the relationship being put in the shadow by the younger, more vivacious and popular member of the couple?
Gee, I haven't a clue who you could be talking about.
Well, we were trying to keep this anonymous.
Since I'm sure this is just Bob and Betty from somewhere in USA,
yes.
I'd say, hey, buddy, kick back and enjoy the ride.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. That's actually good advice. We have another friend, and he's a guy. He's very disciplined, very cool, reserved, not good at expressing his emotions. But he's partnered with somebody who's just the opposite. So how and sometimes he's criticized. How would you teach somebody who's too cool, who's too reserved, to sort of let out his feelings and whoop some ass, say, if that's what's needed?
Well, gee, again, I'm overwhelmed by your transparency. But you know, cool is in right now. I think cool is in. So I think I would stay with the cool. And you know, you talk about these partners that you pick.
Yeah.
He's picked a partner that sometimes has to open his mouth just to change feet. So maybe being cool is a good counterbalance. I don't know. What do you think?
It's possible. It's possible, I guess. Well, Dr. Phil, we're so delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
America Turns Its Lonely Eyes to You, George Francis Train.
Maybe you, like a lot of Americans, aren't really thrilled with the two choices we've got left for president. Well, historically, at least, you would not be alone. The website WeirdUniverse.net recently reviewed some of the more colorful fringe presidential candidates from the past. We're going to ask you three questions about people who might have, maybe even should have been president. If you get two right, you win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl's voice giving his acceptance speech on their home answering machine.
Oh, how special would that be?
Very special, Dr. Phil. Very special. Carl, who is Dr. Phil McGraw playing for?
Dr. Phil is playing for Linda Mann of Woodland Hills, California.
All right, ready to go?
All right, Linda, it's you and me.
There you go. First question. Let's start with the aforementioned George Francis Train. He was a railway tycoon, oddly enough, and a famous adventurer. He ran for president as an independent in 1872. He might have been doomed in his campaign by a self-imposed handicap, though. What was it? A, he wouldn't ask for people's votes. He would say, quote, "and thus I demand your allegiance," unquote. Was it B, a confirmed believer in nudism? He would routinely walk around public parks in the buff. Or C, he refused to shake voters' hands, saying skin-to-skin contact would drain his, quote, psychic force.
President Howie Mandel.
Well, I have to say, if B and C went together, if he was walking around nude, I'm guessing people wouldn't want to shake his hand.
That's probably true.
Because you always say, I wonder where that's been. In
you
his
know.
Case, you know where
exactly.
It's been. So I'm going to say A.
You're going to say A, that he wouldn't ask for people's vote. He would just demand their allegiance. No, actually, it was C, he refused to shake people's hands.
Oh, really?
Really. To indicate a warm greeting, he would shake his own hand in front of the person. You have two more chances here. Let's go for the next question.
I feel such pressure now that I've blown the first one.
Well, yeah. That's how we like to arrange it.
So I got
to
go two. I got to go two for here.
Okay. Go two for. Our next candidate is Leonard Jones, who ran in every presidential election from the late 1840s to the 1860s, as well as running for the Senate, Congress, and governor of Kentucky, all unsuccessfully. He basically had one plank in his platform. If elected, Jones promised to help every American do what? A, draw their salaries in solid gold. B, live forever. Or C, travel to the moon.
Oh, wow. I'm going to have to say, draw their salaries in solid gold.
Right. Everybody would just walk around with ingots and pay for their whatever.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's a beautiful idea. But no, it was actually live forever. That was his nickname, in fact. It was Live Forever Jones. He was the candidate and only member of the High Moral Party, which held that people could live forever through prayer and fasting. Its platform died with him. Here, Dr. Phil, is your last question. Our last candidate is Homer Tomlinson, who came in third behind Lyndon Johnson and Barry Goldwater in the 1964 presidential election. However, he recovered well from his loss. What did he go on to do? A, he founded the Taco Bell restaurant chain. B, he walked around the world dragging 48 feet of cast iron chain behind him the whole way. Or C, he declared himself king of the world.
Gosh. It was a chihuahua that started Taco Bell.
Yeah.
So I'm going to cross that one off. And if he dragged the chain around the world and three-quarters of its water, he would have drowned. So I'm going to say declared himself king of the world.
You're right, sir. Very well done.
Okay, I finished strong.
You did. You finished strong.
I like that. See, I've always said it's not how you start, it's how you finish.
Well, exactly. No, but you still lost. You're so finished, we're not even going to roll credits. That is incredible.
To explain, 1964 was Homer Tomlinson's third presidential run as the candidate of the Theocratic Party. He decided that he was tired of messing around for small stakes after that loss, and so declared himself king of the world, and he ruled us until his death from a folding chair throne in a hotel room in Jerusalem. Carl, how did Dr. Phil do in our quiz, Carl?
Well, Dr. Phil salvaged the last question, Peter, but he needed at least two to win for Linda Mann.
Dr. Phil, I just want to say, even though you didn't win, you did a wonderful job, and we're really glad to have you.
Thank you, Mom.
Yeah, you see what I mean? You see what I mean? It's useful. It's nice. Dr. Phil is the star of the Dr. Phil Show. He's the author of many, many books, including the upcoming Preparing for the 7 Worst Days of Your Life, coming out in November. Dr. Phil, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. We'll see you soon.
I hope so. Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.